And just to give you a brief example of how powerless and how unmanageable my life had become, I was hospitalized for a week after having a heart attack and heart failure. Like, my heart stopped working. And my doctor told me, you know, listen, when you get home, you're going to need to lose a little weight, and you're going to need to avoid certain foods. And no matter how scared I was, and no matter how badly I wanted to live for my children, I was literally binging in my hospital bed. And I gained more than 40 pounds within a couple of months after I had that heart attack and left the hospital. So I guess what I want to say is, if I could have stopped on my own, with my own willpower, or based on fear, or humiliation, or any human power, I would have stopped. So I did become recovered through the big book, by committing to abstinence and by working the steps. I've tried OA before, but until this time in OA, I had almost no relationship with God. I was either mad at God and blaming him for all my problems, or treating God like Santa Claus, right? And just making demands. And I wasn't spiritual at all. And I was pretty resistant to the idea of God, prayer, meditation. And back then, if someone was here telling me that their answer to their food problem or their answer to any problem was a relationship with God, I'd probably run the other way. Like, I would have not been open to it, if I'm being honest. And in my after picture that was up there, I'm wearing my Serenity Now shirt. For any Seinfeld fans. And I love my Serenity Now shirt because I love the irony of it, because I can't demand serenity, right? Like, no matter how hard I try, that can't happen. I get a gift of serenity from my higher power. And serenity comes from my willingness to work all of these steps by accepting things as they are and through working on my relationship with my higher power. And I start every day by working on that relationship, by working step 11 through prayer and meditation, as outlined, you know, starting on page 86 in the big book, as Lindsay read. So my present circumstances are pretty chaotic. I work full time. I have two children. I have two dogs. I have a cat. I have a husband. And to be honest, my house feels like it's really been shrinking for through this pandemic. I'm working from home. My kids are remote learning. We really haven't left the house in 10 months. It's very hard for me to get any alone time. And yet, attempting to, you know, I can still pray and I can still meditate, and it's still doable. So most days my morning routine does not go perfectly or anywhere near perfect. I often try to take steps 1, 2, and 3 while I am still in bed, because no matter how early in the morning I wake up, the moment my foot hits the floor, there is like some child or creature or somebody who senses it and comes to me needing something. But you know, the good news is I can still be recovered and I can still connect with God, even if it's not ideal or perfect. And before program, if I had tried to pray or meditate and my kids were awake and bothering me, I would have said, you know, like, to hell with this, I quit. I would have been resentful. I would have hated myself. And now if my morning routine is interrupted, it's okay. Because that's life, and I'm accepting life on life's terms, and I can still find a way to connect and to lean into my higher power and to pray and to be quiet and to say, thy will be done. And I know God is with me always, and I can always be with God, even if I don't have a perfect 30 minutes of absolute silence each morning. You know, because if I waited for everything to be perfect to pray and meditate, then I would never pray and meditate. I don't think I have time to go into the specifics of my morning prayer and meditation, but I do have a regular practice that ideally includes quiet time, reading, writing, prayer. I can tell you that a large focus is on step 3. You know, in the morning, I surrender. I surrender my expectations of all people and things and outcomes. And upon awakening for me is, you know, God, please guide me today. God, let me take the next right action today. You know, asking, how can I be of service? How can I carry out your will? How can I do the next right thing and not be invested in the outcomes? You know, the third step prayer says, take away my difficulties. I'm not asking God to take away, you know, my back pain or to fix my broken dishwasher. What I'm asking is, God, take away my character defects, you know, my selfishness, my resentments, my fears, the things that are standing in the way of my connection to God, in standing in the way of my carrying out God's will, and standing in the way of my serenity, right? And so at the bottom of page 86, where it says, if we face indecision, we relax and take it easy. So that's actually really funny for me because I am pretty tightly wound as a person. I'm pretty like uptight. And so I try to relax and take it easy. And my God has a sense of humor, right? Like I laugh and like sometimes through gritted teeth, I'm like, God, help me relax and take it easy. And then I laugh at myself because I am an anxious person, right? And sometimes I do find it hard to focus on the present. So before I'll meditate sometimes, like I'll quickly jot down what's bothering me or what's in my mind in order to try to clear it out before. So I mentioned there's a lot of noise in my chaotic house, but there's also just like a lot of noise within me. And one thing I do is I commit my food right away so that there's no noise about food. And that's been really helpful. Meditation during a pandemic in my shrinking house. I've got like my dogs are, they're like two little puppy sisters and they're like howling and wrestling. And I have children howling and wrestling. And I have my diabetic cat who needs her insulin shot meowing. And I've got phones ringing and my husband is coming up and down the stairs, right? So before program, all of this would have infuriated me. I would have been like, don't you know I need my quiet time? You know, like, let me be peaceful. Like it would have really upset me. Okay. Now I realize like life is messy and loud. And I have to ask myself, am I demanding the world bend to me or am I accepting things as they are? And am I willing to bend with the world? And for me, this is really all about getting like right-sized first thing in the morning. And upon awakening is a great opportunity to remind myself that I am not in charge, right? And it's also a great opportunity to practice gratitude, right? So I do not like being interrupted in the morning, but sometimes like when I'm listening for God and I'm leaning into God, and instead I hear a kid screaming for me, right? Sometimes that is God, right? That's God telling me, go love your babies, you know, enjoy all you have to be grateful for. And before taking the steps, like my attitude would have been, if I can't do this perfectly, then I'm not doing it at all, you know? But the big book doesn't say like, thou must wake up at 5 a.m. and you must have perfect silence and you must meditate perfectly for 1 hour or you fail, right? Like that's not what it says. So I guess I want to say that like any way that we can connect with our higher power, right? No matter how imperfectly, if you're willing to try and you're willing to be open-minded, then you can meditate and you can recover. And there are directions in the big book, as Lindsay just read some of them, and I try to follow them. And I do have serenity now. and I'm very grateful for that. And I'm out of time. I can definitely share any specifics about my practice or what it was like after the meeting. My contact number is here. Feel free to reach out. And thank you so much for letting me share. And I'm going to pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Katie. And before we go to our next panelist, I wanted to quickly read a few house rules and Zoom etiquette information. now that we're almost halfway through the meeting. Okay, so a few house rules. Please be aware your voice will be audible and heard on this recording if you share today. There will not be any editing of these recordings. Also, a note about Zoom etiquette. Please be sure to stay muted at all times. If you are moving about, please turn your video off. If you are eating or doing another activity, please turn your video off. Remember, we see everything. And for those who have updated your Zoom account recently, your raise hand function is now a yellow emoji hand and is located under reactions, the bottom. So we will have another panelist, and then Ali will close us in a meditation, and then we will open it up for Q&A. So I will now turn it over to the second panelist, who is from Kentucky, Matt J.F. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Lindsay. And thank you to Susan and everyone who, and Noam and everyone who's making all of this possible. I really appreciate your service. So I'll be honest with you, I prepared nothing. And I did that intentionally because I lived my life before my program, preparing rigorously for many, many things, including many times losing weight. And it didn't really work out for me. So I thought what I would do this morning is qualify quickly and then spend a little time talking about my conception of my higher power, because I think that's an important frame to understand my step 11 morning practice, such as it is, and then we'll see. So let me qualify quickly. I don't have a ton of photographs of myself before a program, but here's a few. The first couple are me in high school. I've been morbidly obese my whole adult life and was a badass bass player. And that's me, I don't know, probably in 2014 on the right. And by the way, on the right there, what you can't see, because I couldn't find a picture, is I had gastric bypass surgery back in 2003. So I was actually about 110 pounds heavier than I was in that photograph. Really no photos of me from that time. So that's me. I came into this program unexpectedly. I actually thought away was BS. I had said that aloud to someone and meant it. I didn't say BS though. I was a devout agnostic. I just thought step one for the likes of me was ridiculous, said the guy who'd had gastric bypass surgery. I came into this program when I listened to Laurie C's Big Book Step Study on YouTube on a long drive because I needed to listen to a Big Book Step Study, not OA. I was not looking for information on OA. In fact, I was openly disdainful of it. And when that came up in my search results, I was like, I don't want to listen to that, but I did. And when I heard him say, for me, there are some foods that once I start, I can't stop and I can't stop from starting. That was my moment when I realized. So that was February 23rd of 2019. I no longer think OA is BS. I no longer think step one does not apply to me. I know with certainty that it absolutely applies to me. And I am no longer a devout agnostic. I grew up with no religion. And as I said, I came to the program a devout agnostic, meaning I thought that there was something out there greater than me, but it was like at a cosmic scale. It had nothing to do with me. And where my faith journey has led is to actually a very simple conception of my higher power, which is, I think, appropriate to a black and white thinking addict. I take literally the words from page 53 of the Big Book. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else God is nothing. God either is or God isn't. What was our choice to be? I chose everything. And that's my faith conception. God is everything. Everyone on this line, the technology I'm talking on, the trees somewhere outside my window, everything. Because for me, what that does is, and by the way, I never remember that moment to moment. I have to remind myself of it about 9,000 times a day. My self-will rises up all the time. For me, the purpose of working the steps, and in particular step 10 or step 11, which I promise I'll get to in a second, is to bring myself back to that recognition that God is everything. That includes me. And that means that every choice I make is not worthy of my self-recrimination, is not worthy of my shame, because I do not have the standing. It's God. I don't know why things unfold the way they do, but that's not my place to know either. So I do sort of live my life now. I didn't think of it until listening to Katie speak, that in pursuit of a three-letter word, but the word is not really God. The word is huh, H-U-H. I think of it as the great cosmic huh. I really, my life is better when my reaction to anything that happens is just kind of, oh, I guess this is what's happening now. I'm not saying that happens all the time. I'm not even saying it happens most of the time. But the point of my spiritual practice is to help me get back to that place faster when I'm knocked off the head of that pin, which I am all the time. So the reason why my morning spiritual practice, which is not very doctrinaire, is so important to me, is that it helps ground me in that reality every day. So I know I'm going to be out of time here soon, and I'll just walk you through my morning. So I have an outside medical condition that can make it really hard for me to maintain focus for a long period of time. I have a very detailed morning checklist. That morning checklist begins with things like rinse your mouth with water, fill up your water bottle, put on your watch, check the weather, review your calendar, make your bed. But then it leads to breathe and pray. And breathe and like I really try and follow that routine every morning, because when I don't, there's just no telling what I'll wind up doing by 9 a.m. And I'm usually up at about 5:30. So breathe and pray. I do make my bed, and then I kneel by my bedside with my elbows on my bed, and I clasp my hands together. And when I'm doing this the way that I try and do it, I take three deep breaths. And on each inhale and exhale, I say one word, thy will, not mine, be done. That's how I find my way to, huh. And then I launch into my morning prayer, and it's a prayer and recitation is how it's titled in my little app, or prayer and reading. And it's an amalgamation of, you know, straight out of the big book prayers, prayers that I have added to or modified to as they see, it's sort of like a river that is slowly carving its own course through my life. So as I'm going through, and I've done this every day, more or less, for well over a year, when I feel a lack or something feels like it needs to be covered and it's not, I add it. If a prayer no longer seems to be serving my connection to God and finding of, huh, I take it out. When I hear someone share a prayer or say a prayer I might already have in a different way that really resonates with me, I ask them to send it to me and I add it in. So it's this constant feedback loop of how am I feeling with this, and connecting to that really matters. So I'll just walk you through what's in it. I'm not going to read it aloud because it takes about 8 minutes. I start with a slightly modified. Thank you. I start with a slightly modified version of the set aside prayer. And then I launch into the serenity prayer, but I added and it's a longer version that I found, but I added something in about willingness because that felt important to me. And then this one's important. I don't just say thy will not mine be done at the end, because I found that it's really important for me to say thy will not mine be done. Thy will not mine was done. Thy will not mine is done, because that reconnects me to the idea that it's all a God thing. It's not a Matt thing. all of it. And it always has been, and it's always going to be. I then start with something I wrote about my conception of God, which is that the God of my recovery is the most perfect possible version of me, because God is everything. I'm not saying I'm God. I'm saying that's what God is. And then I walk through a recitation of my powerlessness over four different conditions, including compulsive overeating. And then I ask God for willingness and power and grace to live within my plan of eating, to be patient and present, and to make better choices. And I have a list of what those choices feel like. I then have a gratitude recitation. And then some stuff I wrote that just came out extemporaneously one day that was like, I need to remind myself that this isn't optional. So what it says is, this is not optional. I cannot be casual about any of this. My life is in the balance. That reconnects me to how essential it is for me to keep doing this footwork every single day. It goes through a couple of other things. And then if I'm deep in resentment, the resentment prayer. And then I end with the third step prayer and the 11th step prayer. And then I launch into my day. And I do that almost every day when I'm not traveling. And that's, I saw you, Lindsay. Thank you. And I find that that helps reconnect me to that higher power and helps me find the great cosmic a little more efficiently as I blunder through my life. So with that, I will pass. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much, Matt. And I will turn it back over to Ali, who will lead us in another meditation, and then we'll open it up for Q&A for all of our panelists.
Thank you, Lindsay. So just before the meditation, the phrase on awakening, one of the things that I find beautiful about it is that we can have that awakening, not just when we first wake up, but anytime we connect with step three or step seven or 11 throughout the day, we are having an awakening. And it is these micro hits, these glimpses of awakenings that open the door for having had a spiritual awakening. So one of the awakenings is to connect with the idea that the means and the ends of the program are the same. The end of the program is more love and more connection and more belonging. And the means of that end is the same. So an awakening is anytime we are using the means to the end. It's always around deeper connections with the practice of love, loving kindness or compassion or joy or serenity. And love is something we already have. It's already in us. It's not something alien. It's masked by our harms and by our wounds and by our defects, but it's there. And so we can practice kindness, which is the essence of the 12 steps. As a way of making connection to our higher power and to others and to ourselves. So this particular practice of loving kindness can be directed towards in four directions. The first is towards people we already love. We don't have to work too hard. We already love them. Towards people who are neutral. We don't know them, but we run across them, the cashier, people driving on the freeway, folks in this Zoom room. We can also direct it towards people who give us a difficult time. We have a difficult time finding that space of generosity, of love. Of course, the big book talks about that. Resentments, for example. And we can also direct it towards ourselves, which is one of the hardest places. So this notion of unawakening is to practice this meditation on love, even when it's not necessary. In fact, it's best to practice it when it doesn't matter. It builds our muscles for when it does matter. So this particular practice is to focus only on one direction, which is towards people we already love. And as we do this practice, to keep in mind that what is happening is that we are revealing to ourselves that which already exists. We just have to let it out more often. So if you're willing, you can close your eyes, find a comfortable way to sit. You don't have to close your eyes if you don't wish. It's not necessary. It works just as well. But just a soft gaze. And bring to mind someone who you already love, who, when you think about them, you already feel some warmth, perhaps a smile, sense of deep connection, gratitude. Of course, one of the things that happens with being a compulsive overeater, we start checking in with who should we love rather than who do I love. So here, to make it easy, you can find a pet, could be a spiritual advisor, could be someone who is no longer here but has been a source of refuge and guide, could be someone who is alive, could be nature. But you bring that vision of that person or pet into your mind's eye. Imagine them sitting in front of you. And just check in to see what may be happening inside you, inside your body, as you connect with this person who you already love. And this is just a practice. It's not have fun with it. It's not, am I doing it right or wrong? There is no right or wrong. Just connect with this notion of love. And what do you notice? Perhaps there is a softness or a smile or some sensation in the heart, chest area, or there may be nothing, and that's okay too. What we're doing is cultivating the possibility of connecting with love. Connecting with that which is already inside of us. If it's a pet, just perhaps noticing a smile, noticing their funny ways. Personalities. And one of the things we know from the big book is the importance of using phrases. When we pray, we use phrases. When we use the slogans, we use phrases. These phrases are quite helpful, skillful, powerful. And so we send, in this case, phrases of loving kindness towards this individual or pet. You can use my phrases or you can use your own. It doesn't matter. It works just as well. What's important is the intention. The intention of sending someone we love loving kindness. And of course, you can use your own language. There are many languages represented here. But you can use my phrase if you wish. And you send this person or pet phrases of kindness. May you be happy. May you have peace and ease. May you know that you're loved and lovable. May you be safe, healthy, and strong. These are wishes we have for another human being, just because. And so we send them these wishes. And we check into our bodies, sensing whatever might be present, gratitude, peace, calm, love. And we direct phrases again. May you be safe. May you have peace and ease. May your goodness grow. May you have meaningful work to do. We're just opening up the heart space. The journey of the 12 steps is a journey from the head to the heart. That's the end. So we access the heart. We teach the heart to intentionally practice loving kindness. You might even imagine sending them heart rainbows as we send the phrases. May you have peace. May you have ease. May you be safe, protected. Now just taking a breath. Imagine the same person or pet sitting across you, sending you the same loving kindness phrases, this time to you. Well, for some, this may be a little challenging. It's all right. It's a practice to receive love. So let's see if we can hear those loving kindness phrases sent by the person or pet we've chosen towards ourselves. May you, meaning I, be safe. Dear one, may you have peace and ease. Just check into your heart space. There is resistance, that's all right. Nothing to force. We're seeding the possibility of sending and receiving the basis of this program. Kindness, generosity, compassion, love. May you, meaning me, be free from harm. Be safe, protect, peaceful, be free of danger, inner and outer danger. And just check into your own heart space to see what may be happening. Or whatever it is, to allow it. If it's pleasant, allowing it to grow. And if it's neutral or there's nothing happening, just know that you are still planting the seed for awakening. Can't do it wrong. And just let's end this with sending yourself some appreciation for cultivating the basis of kindness. Just the willingness to try. Letting go of any outcomes. And just briefly sending out loving kindness phrases to the 400 plus people in this Zoom room. May all in this room, across all the globe, all states, boundaries, borders, may we all have peace and ease. May we have freedom from harm. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes and end this brief meditation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you again, Ollie. It was incredible. Thank you so much. Okay, so now we will open it for Q&A for our panelists. And so Noam is going to reopen the chat for everybody, just in case you'd like to share or show your phone number, etc. But if you do have questions, please go ahead and raise your hand in the participants window. Again, if you have upgraded your Zoom, it's going to be under the reactions button down at the bottom of the screen. And we will go ahead and go through those raised hands. I know we only have 8 minutes in this scheduled session. Depending on the panelists' availability, we can go a few minutes over if needed on the Q&A. So we will begin with Melissa P. from Buffalo. Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, there we go. Good morning. Oh, thank you. I am like, my heart is just beaming right now. That's just, I'm amazed by all of you. Thank you so much for this. My question is this. When I start my day, right, and I have my vision meeting on at 7, you know, I have that heart space and I'm flowing. Love and kindness feels really easy. And then it hits. And I, you know, have 10th step partners and can do a 10th step during the day. But I'm wondering, what is any of your practice for recentering during the day and reconnecting? I've heard of people setting timers in their phones. And I'm just wondering what any of your practices are to help you bring that kind of sense of ease and comfort in that morning meditation with you throughout the day. So thank you so much. I will mute.
This is Matt JF. I'm happy to answer that one for me. I do set timers on my phone. And when the timer goes off, I hit repeat. And I just try and pause and at least say a quick, "I will not mind, be done," whatever I'm doing. That's sometimes really challenging. The other things that I do are, I do try and maintain that structure of my day for the whole day. That's usually off the rails by about 11 a.m. And so that prayer practice helps me recenter to that sometimes. But the big thing that I try to remember is that for me, grace lies in returning to grace. It's the point of a needle that I never stay on for very long. I pass over it and may pause for just a brief moment. And it's just all about the journey back. Like, that's the point of this. I have a friend in program who says, "I figure I'll get it right 10 minutes after I'm dead." So that's what I do.
Thanks, Melissa, for your question. Katie or Ali, do you have anything to add on that question?
I don't. That was lovely. Thank you, Matt.
I'll add a tiny bit. One thing I did used to set alarms and I liked it for a while. And then I would find that they were going off at like inopportune moments and it would just sort of frustrate me more. That's just me. So what I did, and actually a good friend in program who's on this meeting pointed out to me, and I've really been taking advantage of it, is so I know that I can say "Thy will be done" and center myself 5 times a day. if I pray in the morning, if I pray before bed, and if I pray before each of my meals. And so I've really been doing that as well, because, you know, the book says constantly throughout the day, right? So I feel like 5 times is reasonable. And then of course, if other things come up and I'm able to catch it and do it, or a 10 step, as you mentioned, but really, like, I try before the meal to say it, you know, to say thy will be done and commit to it in that moment. And that's been helpful to me as well.
Thanks, Katie. All right, our next question will be Karen from Syracuse, New York. And I also quickly wanted to mention, if you'd like to ask a question anonymously, please feel free to just chat me directly, and I'm happy to ask it as well. So Karen, all you.
Good morning, my name is Karen Kay, a recovered compulsive eater from Syracuse, New York, and my credits don't transfer. Awesome shares, and thank you everybody for your service. Katie, I don't have anybody in my home, but I feel the same way that you do. So how did you create that time and space? Because I get sponsees really early in the morning, as early as 4:30. I'll get calls from abroad, and I don't see, I have to get up at 3:30 if I want to have the time. So if you have any thoughts or Matt on that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so right. And everybody has different circumstances, right? So there's always going to there. Well, potentially there's going to be something in each of our lives that might be different that's standing in the way of us having that time for ourselves. The thing that jumped out at me with what you said, Karen, is this. And I think giving service is so important, right? And step 12 and speaking to sponsees, and that's a part of the program. It's a very important part. My sponsor said to me something though, that a tree, so think of a tree, right? And if you don't take care of that tree, like a fruit tree, if you don't take care of the tree, then it's going to give bad fruit. Right? It's going to give sour fruit if we don't take care of the tree itself and water the tree and let the tree do what it needs to do to be a healthy tree. So I think it's amazing that you wake up early and you work with sponsees. I would just say, if you can find some time for you, because the program is also us connecting with God so that we can give sweet fruit to people, right? That we can sort of share in that way. So I don't know your circumstances, but like I said, sometimes I just lay still in bed and I don't move for like an hour if I can. And I do all my prayers just right there, because the movement is enough to like get the day going. So, you know, everyone's circumstances are different, but our importance with our higher power is so crucial that it is important to make that time, however we can make it happen.
Yeah. I'll just add, thank you, Katie. I hadn't realized this until you were speaking. This happens. I heard Katie share like a couple of weeks ago, and I, on a walk, and I was like, my mind was blown. So it's like, it's you, Katie, it's all you. So that I, because of that focus issue that I have, I tend to work from templates a lot. And for me, it's easier to remove things from a list than to add things to a list. So my step 11 nightly review template, which I do the morning after, because of that same focus issue, has long lists of, it starts with a long list of, these are the things that, that I didn't do that I should have if I wanted to recover more better, or that I did do that I know align with that. And what I never realized until this moment is an enormous number of them are self-care, in the sense that they create more capacity and or I just know my life is better when I do them. And it includes things like doing a step 11 nightly review, doing my morning prayer. I don't know why my life is better when I do some of those things, but it is. So I try and do them. Even when the this is BS feeling crops up, which it does a lot. Like, I don't want to do them a lot of the time. And one of those things is choose adequate sleep. So it's really just a matter of reminding myself of the things that align with my recovery and trying to choose as many of them as I can.
Thank you, Katie and Matt. Thank you. And thank you for your question, Karen. All right. So we have two more questions in the chat, but I have a couple that were sent to me. So Barb E. New Jersey, go ahead and ask your question, and then I will, I'll go to the questions that were asked to me directly, anonymously.
Okay. Thank you so much. The shares, the qualifications were extraordinary, but the meditations really spoke to me, because I have a hummingbird mind and I couldn't meditate for more than a minute. But I like that simple prayer, thy will be done. And I wake up in the morning and I just say, God, thank you, I'm awake. But now I can say, thy will be done. And I know before breakfast and lunch and dinner, I say, God, please let this food nourish me, not activate my compulsion to overeat. But I just wanted to share something with you from today's For Today book, because it seems like it's God-inspired. It said, considering this is keys of the kingdom that we're in, prayer should be the key of the day and the lock of the night. I begin and end this day in conscious contact with God, as I understand God. So my question is really to the people, to the wonderful people who shared the meditation. How long did you start it, and how long do you last it now? Did it start with 2 minutes, 10 minutes? What was it? Because I absolutely love about planting the seed on awakening and being willingness to try and being willingness to look for peace. And I never thought of my dog, my cat, being my mother who was deceased, as being someone that I could go to for that love and feeling. So it's to the meditators that I'm throwing my question at.
So, Barbara, your question is for Ali. Okay.
So, of course, everyone is a meditator. We may not know it. I've been in program 36 years, and what I find is that this journey of meditation and the 11th step is an unfolding one, and to attempt to grasp it as a snapshot may not be as helpful as just recognizing that it's an evolution. For me, the way it started was my sponsor 36 years ago told me to memorize from page 86 on awakening all the way to the end of that chapter, which is, I think, 3 or 4 pages. And so it began with simply reading that every day on awakening. We think about the 24 hours ahead, on and on and on and on. And then a year later, my sponsor introduced me to the simple practice of just counting my breath for 6 minutes, which for me was, I would have rather stuck a needle in my eye. 6 minutes was impossible. But I did it for years. But what happens is, when we even hesitatingly and in broken ways begin the journey, take that first step, we are already accessing the power of expanded consciousness. Even that 6 minutes, even reading on awakening, whether we know it or not, is expanding our capacity to draw down a higher wisdom. And that higher wisdom begins having its way with us silently. so that as time goes on, we engage with even more subtler ways of finding home. I love Katie's quote. I wrote it. It was just one of those beautiful quotes that could be the title of a book. She said, "Life is messy and loud." In Zorba the Greek, the main character says, "Full catastrophe living." So when we practice the 11th step, what's happening is our bandwidth to live within this messy and loud life, this experience we call life, our ability to do that expands as well, and more things come in. So today I go on 5-day, 7-day silent meditation retreats, which would have been inconceivable when my sponsor told me 36 years ago to do it just for 6 minutes. Things happen as a result of opening the door, or someone said in the reading today, the key. Because we're compulsive overeaters, we assume the key and the arrival are one and the same. The key opens the imagination, and then the journey begins. And so awakenings then are many tiny little steps. So whatever your practice is, person who asked the question, that's the practice. As faultingly as it is, try something, even if it's a minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Ali. Okay, so one of the questions that was asked anonymously, I'm going to grab it here. Okay, so are there any types of meditation for those who find it hard to stay in their body and from whom meditation is difficult? This particular person says, "I've tried yoga and it's been effective since it incorporates movement, but any comments from any of the panelists on that?" Ali, any thoughts on that particular question? Or Matt, I see you unmuted.
Yeah, I'll just quickly say it's also really hard for me. I also do find it easier to maintain focus when there's some kind of core engagement involved. So one thing is I bought an inflatable cushion to sit on that's slightly unstable, and that tends to help me. And the other thing is there's an app that I really like that has some really great guided meditations. As Ali said, it's not, and by the way, I don't do this every day. It's on my list every day, but I don't do it every day. The point for me isn't like, oh, I was totally present for that entire 20-minute meditation. It's just that it's like an elastic band that keeps pulling me back over the point of that needle, more than I would if left to my own devices. So that's all I got.
Sometimes trying to grasp it can actually keep us further away. So a practice that I found helpful for me is to seed my intention with my higher powers. So it could be something as simple as, show me tiny examples of a meditation might be for me. I remember working with forgiveness and I couldn't quite get it. And I finally, on a hike, said to my higher power, In your time, show me what forgiveness would look like even for a second. What would forgiveness feel like in my body if I had it even for a second? And then I let it go. And there was a time down the road, whatever it was, weeks, months, where I had a glimpse of what forgiveness could look like in my body if I had it. So rather than fighting it, just seeding the intention of wanting, desiring, and then recognizing it as just the opening of the door rather than the landing, the ending. It's just the beginning. But it's a gentle beginning. It's not holding on to dear life. We don't go to the gym and pick up 100-pound weight and say, God damn it, I can't do it. Right? We pick up an ounce, a pound, and we work with that. So that's been my experience with it.
I'll try to add just another quickly to everything else that's been shared. I do often wake up with a lot of noise and a lot of hard time sitting still. And if something or many things are bothering me at that moment and I'm able to, I will like write a letter to God, or I'll just write it all out really quick. Like I have to just get it out, because if I attempt to just sit still and be quiet, I can't. I can, it's too much. So sometimes I'll write it all out and that will help me just to try to quiet whatever's bothering me at that moment. And then also another fellow in program recommended like nature, walking in nature. So it's a little cold right now for me, for my taste. But over the spring and summer, I would go outside to meditate and trying listening to, you know, the sounds or just appreciating nature. I found helpful in the beginning trying to be quiet. So I was just going to add that. Thanks.
Thank you all. And thanks for continuing to stay on. I know we've gone over, so appreciate that. So it looks like Roz R has her hand raised in the chat. So Roz, go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you. My name's Roz R, recovering compulsive overeater. Thank you for this and all the people that have put this together. My question again is about the meditation. I've been clean and sober, abstinent for quite a while. But I wake up in the morning, like I've heard shared, you know, with so much chatter going on and so much, like I've always had anxiety and I have a hard time getting started. And I do the same thing. I say, you know, the first three steps in my head, I do the Bahan awakening before I get out of bed. But somehow I wondered, like, I would love to hear some of your like morning routines, if anyone is willing to share, like, you know, what do you do to then get yourself up and out? Because it sometimes takes me a while and I'm like doing the work, but the inside of my body is not feeling the peace. And I just wondered if anyone experiences that, or if you have, how do you suggest, you know, moving through that? Because the food's not the problem. It's how I wake up in the morning problem. So yeah, I'd love to hear how you do morning routines and act through it. I know that slogan, you know, it's better to act your way into new ways of thinking than think your way. And I think I have a problem with thinking too much. So that's my question to anyone who would like to expand upon what they do. It might help. Thank you.
I'll try to jump in for a second. I don't know if this is going to answer your question. I mean, I have a routine and I have a way that I would love it to go every day, right? I do, with reading, you know, from the big book or reading from For Today and writing on it. And I have a lot of prayers I like, and I'd love to do a lot of quiet time and meditation. And I have an ideal routine that I have written out. Okay. But what I'm hearing is, and this happens to me a lot, sometimes I cannot get quiet because it's just, the day has already, like, we've hit the ground already, and it's, I can't take it back and like go back and be quiet. It's like too late. So, you know, some things are practical things, like I try to wake up early, right? And I try to really commit that time early. And sometimes that doesn't happen, man. It's like dark and it's cold and I don't want to wake up at 5 a.m. and my body doesn't, like, can't do it. I went to bed late the night before. So part of it is sometimes I can't do that. if I can, I do. And part of it is being gentle with yourself. Like if you have a 30-minute routine that in a perfect day, you would like to do, right? 10 minutes of reading, 10 minutes of writing, 10 minutes of prayer. I'm making that up, right? Let's pretend that's what you wanted to do. And you wake up and it's not going to happen that day. Like, I try to be gentle with myself too, right? Because like trying to force your will in any way, it's the program, right? I can't force serenity and I can't force half an hour. And sometimes my mind is too loud and the day is too crazy already. So certainly, I guess my answer would be like, if you can try to set aside time before your, whatever life is for you, right? Before that's set to begin, if you can gift yourself that time beforehand to do it, I would say go for that. And even if you plan, right? We plan and it doesn't happen. I would just say, be kind to myself. Sometimes, like I'm doing my third step prayer, I hear someone coming down the stairs, like it's over, or in my mind, it's too loud. Sometimes I just say, God, today I have a minute. Let me have a minute with you. Let me turn my life over to you in this moment. Let me remind myself, I'm not in charge. I'm out of the outcome business. God, let me do the right thing today. And that's all I got. And it's a good way to start the day. And it's a good reminder that nothing's perfect, right? And that's what I would say about that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can I tag on if that's okay, Lindsay? Katie, again, I love everything you've said. And Ali, I tend not to follow you, so I've loved everything you've said too. I just want to say that out loud. So I thought of man plans, God laughs while you were talking, Katie. But Roz, very specifically, there were two things that came up. Number one, I don't know if it's okay to curse on this or not, so I won't. When the this is BS feeling shows up, which I realized shows up one morning when I was about to do my morning prayer. And I was like, this is BS. This isn't doing anything. It's not helping me. Nothing's changing. I'm not going to do it. I know exactly what to do when that happens. My footwork. Like it's not, I sometimes say my morning recitation by rote and don't even remember saying the prayer the second it's over. Until I get to that section about this is not optional. I cannot be casual about any of this. My life is in the balance because it's always true. So it doesn't matter to me how well I do my footwork is that I do my footwork. My footwork is construction work. And what I'm constructing is not recovery. What I find is that every day when I do my footwork, my interior space gets a tiny bit bigger and the table inside it gets a tiny bit wider. And then there's room for more chairs around it. When I started, it was like a tiny room with a tiny table and one chair. And every time the feelings would show up, they would get my freaking chair. And I wind up on my butt in the dirt. And what happens today is they show up and I can offer them a chair, but it's never mine. And that's why I keep doing my footwork so that room has enough chairs for everything that shows up. So hope that helps.
It does. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Katie and Matt. Ali, did you have anything to add to Raza's question?
You know, this, we've heard the expression, I woke up in the morning and the committee woke up an hour before me. And when I wake up, the committee is doing its thing. So the monkey mind, the sun is rising, by the way, right where I live. And so I'm getting full sun exposure, which is beautiful. The monkey mind is, there's a point at which there is a recognition that the monkey mind is not the problem. That the mind that is constantly producing is simply doing its job. And of course, as an addict, its thought production is more intense and frequent than the normie. And so I don't try to stop the monkey mind. What I do is to recognize the monkey mind. And then once I recognize the monkey mind, then make a gentle effort to return to whatever it is I'm intending with my program. So as I wake up in the morning and the monkey mind is good and going at full speed. By the way, the monkey mind is a sign of intelligence, so we honor it, right? Okay, there it is. What's more important is recognizing the monkey mind. And we're not so much, what we're really doing is using our superpower of attention to redirect attention from the monkey mind to whatever program tenets I'm working on. So for example, when I wake up in the morning and the monkey mind is going, recognizing the monkey mind and making some effort to return to one of the things I do first thing in the morning, which is gratitude. Make a list of my gratitude in my mind. Now, I may come up with two things I'm grateful for. And when monkey mind is at its most intense, I might slip away from making a list of gratitude into whatever it is I'm thinking, not even knowing that I've just drifted. So the drift does not have to announce itself. It's just what happens. I may drift for a minute, 5 minutes, 7 minutes before I remember, oh, shit, I was supposed to make a gratitude list. And then I return to the gratitude list. I may make one or two more attempts at what I'm grateful for before, unannounced, without fanfare, monkey mind takes me again on a time travel. Wherever it takes me, it doesn't really matter. That's inconsequential. I may notice it right away, and then I come back to gratitude. Or I may take 5 to 10 minutes before I realize I'm deep in some kind of a bad neighborhood. The bad neighborhood is not the problem. It's how quickly can I recognize it so I can use my superpower of attention to return to making a list of what I'm grateful for. So it is possible that I may lie down in bed for half an hour trying to make a gratitude list, or asking for forgiveness for things I may have done wrong or harm that I've may caused others, or asking God for protection, or asking God for guidance. But what's happening is I'm constantly returning. The gift is in the return, not in the monkey mind. It doesn't matter how long I'm in monkey mind, that the gift of seeding serenity over the long haul, going to the gym of returning. That's what we're practicing, is returning always to the third step. right? At any given time, we're off the third step. So we keep practicing coming back to the third step. We do this all day long. We may go hours without being on the third step, in self-will, into anger, into resentment, into whatever fear. But at some point, there's a recognition we come back. That's the gift. And so my own practice, I used to think that my monkey mind was proof of my pathology, proof that I didn't know how to work this program. The difference now is the monkey mind is an invitation to return, knowing that I'll get off the beam again and then returning. It's going to the gym of repetition over and over and over again. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ali and Katie and Matt. And thank you to Gnome for being our fantastic tech host. And I really appreciate everybody for staying 26 minutes over our scheduled time. This has been an incredibly beautiful and inspiring session and a great way to begin the birthday party. So thank you all and enjoy the weekend.